Our world is always moving. So with Merrill Lynch, you can get access to financial guidance online, in person, or through the app. Visit ml.com and learn more about Merrill Lynch, an affiliate of Bank of America. Merrill Lynch makes available products and services offered by Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner & Smith Incorporated, a registered broker-dealer, member SIPC.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Kramer, welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Kramerica. Other people want to make friends, and I happen to have some with me today. I just want to help you make money. My job is not just to entertain you, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. At any given time, the market can be gripped by fear. Whether it's fear of political crisis or fear of rate hikes or fear of inflation or deflation for that matter. It may seem odd to talk about fear on a day when the average just basically meandered higher for most of the day. Well, Dow ultimately dipping 13 points, S&P declining 0.05%, NASDAQ edging up 0.04%. But that's because much of this market lives in fear of one thing and one thing only. It lives in fear of Amazon. Specifically, the power of Amazon to mow over whole industries. Sure, we saw healthcare stocks rally again today on the rollout of the Senate healthcare bill, which looks a lot like the House bill. Every stock in the group went up, the drugs, the biotechs, the medical devices, and especially the insurers and hospitals, which makes me think that they rallied because the bill is written. Looks like it might be too draconian to pass. Whatever your opinions on healthcare policy, there's no universe where the hospitals make more money under a plan that slashes Medicaid and causes millions to lose their insurance. Still, though, I think the undercurrent, or I should say the undertow of Amazon, is such a dominant threat to so many consumer-related sectors in a consumer-driven economy that it's sinking whole swaths of stock once again. If your company is in the crosshairs of Amazon, even if it might only be in the tentative crosshairs, your stock gets taken down. Does a company have Amazon exposure, and how much? That's the question analysts are asking on so many conference calls that it's become the major chord of the moment. Will you be Amazoned is the verb of the day, as in how badly will you be hurt by Amazon's web services or Amazon's consumer interface? The fear is logical. Just this evening, Bed Bath & Beyond reported a miserable quarter. I'm saying it's the proximate cause of the misery. Something's happening now. Something, though. Seeing it, small places, no one seems to be noticing. And that's the characterization seeping in that Amazon, loved by consumers, might end up being viewed as the evil empire. Ever since the announcement that it's buying Whole Foods, coupled with the decision to allow clothes to be tried on without being paid for and then returned easily, there's a queasy feeling that Amazon has overstepped its bounds, that it's become too big, too powerful. Now, we all know consumers who've chatted about how they aren't sure if they like the new all-powerful Amazon, as if it's some sort of government entity or something, or maybe it's more like Skynet. A powerful artificial intelligence system that knows your thoughts and can predict them before you articulate them. I'm not buying that backlash. That's ridiculous. It's idle chatter. Because Amazon Prime is a very powerful tool that's created an irresistible bargain. I don't know a soul hasn't signed up. I'm sure that when Whole Foods gets consolidated, they'll offer deals that will make it too compelling to avoid. Free eggs! Cheaper prepared food! Discounted milk! They can do whatever they want because Amazon stock isn't impacted by their gross margin declines. Investors have become immune to it. They only care about revenue growth.
Bye, 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 bye.
Consumers may adore Amazon, but companies are another story. Plenty of businesses are being threatened by competition from the online titan. And even Amazon suppliers get a raw deal because it's got so much bargaining power. So who at last is standing up to Amazon? Well, why don't we start with Walmart, the Bentonville giant. It's the largest grocer in the country, and it's not taking Amazon sitting down anymore. Sure, Walmart bought Jet.com, which can compete on goods. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about how Walmart's telling suppliers that it doesn't want them to use Amazon's web service system. It wants them to switch to other web services, namely Alphabet. Of course, you know that might know that as Google, Microsoft's Azure, which is very hot, or even IBM. Walmart's too big a customer to say no to, and it's not that hard to switch. A call to Red Hat, which we had on last night, what a stock that is, can make it happen. Now, Oracle, on last night's conference call, brilliant quarter, more later, told us it's going to have a better cloud offering for its customers than Amazon. And Chairman Larry Ellison says that his company can compete with Amazon on price for his current customers. No one has ever really competed on price with Amazon, but now Ellison's doing it. Then there are the investors who are saying that Amazon's power is being overestimated in the marketplace. Last night, we heard that Staples might be taken private by Sycamore, a very smart private equity firm. Staples has long been considered Amazon roadkill. Nordstrom is very much pursuing its own going private transaction. I think buying that stock here makes sense because it will most likely be sold at a higher price. Both deals are based on the idea that Amazon isn't going to wreck their business, so perhaps all that selling in the marketplace, including, of course, the Bed Bath selling tonight, is overdone. Meanwhile, there are other companies that are taking advantage of Amazon. Yesterday, Nike stock went up because of talk it might partner with Amazon. Today, Brave Soul analyst Matthew Boss from J.P. Morgan pointed out that Amazon's biggest customer in terms of clothes, it's the biggest customer for clothes for PVH. You know Manny Treco comes all the time. That's right. PVH has Amazon as a terrific partner. So if the potential deal with Amazon for Nike is good, then it's great for PVH. Someone at last is listening. The stock rallied almost 4% today. Nevertheless, there's a huge disconnect in the market when it comes to Amazon fear. For example, the biggest winner in Amazon's destruction of them all is by far TJX. It has the cash to come in and buy all this excess inventory that pops up when you close the store, which they then mark up for a lower price than Amazon can charge, and they still make a boatload of money. No one cares, though. No one cares right now. Seems to make a new low every day. But then again, no one cared when Home Depot showed you it wasn't being Amazon and the stock went up. However, upon further review, the despot did have a, well, let's just say, ultimately, Home Depot has had a good rally. Here's the bottom line. Not everything can be crushed by Amazon, and the empire is striking back. So Amazon better not get too cocky. The force may at last be with its competitors, if it does. Let's take some questions right here.
Hi, Jim. Given that interest rates are rising and there's plenty of uncertainty in the price of oil, what do you think of the pipeline companies and Tallgrass in particular, limited and general partner?
Okay, first, I have to tell you, I love the thesis, but the thesis has not been working. Tallgrass is a very good entity. It's got good Permian exposure. It's got a nice yield. But the fact is, all those stocks trade together, and they've all been going down as if they are just oil companies and trading specifically with the price of oil. So even though you've got that great yield, it's not protecting you. And that's what I've got most concerned about with that group. That yield will not stop you out. I'm questioning an investment in Tallgrass right now. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Jim. Gina from Jersey. With the ups and downs in oil, where do you see oil in the next 12 months, particularly Royal Dutch Shell?
I'm not a big fan of Royal Dutch Shell. I know they're trying to rationalize through and some, really trying to trimming thing. Here's the problem. I think oil's trying to make a stand here at 42. We just don't have enough buyers. But the reason why it's trying to make a stand is that I think at 42, a lot of people feel that the U.S. will stop pumping. They did sell a lot. A lot of these companies have sold a lot of oil in the futures market. My take is oil's going to bounce between 38 and 42, but don't get sucked in. It's not sustainable. Yes.
Hey, Jim, I'd like to first give a big booyah to the men and women of the East Rutherford Police Department that I work with.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'd like to ask you about MyTech Systems, since they're a pretty mobile company and they're about deposits and capture. Do you think they are a takeover target, or do you think that they
I think it would have before it just went up gigantically. I mean, what, that stock has had a huge move, a kind of an NVIDIA-like move, and it sells at 30 times earnings, up 40% this year. I don't know. Character recognition technology is hot, though. Someone could buy them, but, you know, we don't recommend stocks on that basis. 290 to I would tell you I think it's too hot. It's too hot right now for someone to buy, but it's an interesting spec. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi. Hi, Jim. I'm Paul from the Jersey Shore.
All right.
I wanted to ask you a question. I own some Alibaba, and I'm wondering what the impact of this funding deal for China Unicom is going to impact the stock
market. No, you're in great shape. Baba has got great fundamentals. My partner, David Faber, just spent a lot of time with Jack Ma. I think you've got a winner, and I would own it. And interesting, it didn't even go down with some other stocks in the group went down. Didn't get hurt that badly when the Chinese government cracking down on some of these websites. I like Alibaba a lot. All right, listen up, Amazon. Hubris can lead to one's downfall. Don't get too cocky. The force may be with the competitors. On Mad Money Tonight, George Clooney doesn't have to worry about that college fund for his newborn twins. With news that he sold his tequila company for $1 billion to Diageo. I'll tell you if the competition in the liquor space is heating up. Then looking for something to snack on? How about Mondelez? I'm sitting down with the CEO behind brands like Oreo, Sour Patch Kids, you know, some of my faves. See if it can double stuff your portfolio's profits. And Oracle's flying high today after earnings. I'll tell you why confidence is key when it comes to the stock's latest moves. So stick with Tramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Not very often that I get to talk about one of my favorite subjects on air, tequila. But just yesterday, my doppelganger George Clooney sold his tequila business, Casamigos, to Diageo, the British-based liquor titan, for $700 million up front, with the possibility of another $300 million in performance payments. Wow! And look, you can understand why Diageo was willing to shell out a fortune for this brand. While most categories of liquor are pretty much stagnant right now, tequila's on fire, with total volume growing at a 7.1% clip just last year. Tequila volumes more than doubled from 2002 through 2015, and they're still rising dramatically. But even more impressive, super premium tequilas like Casamigos grew 650% over the same period. Diageo, which you probably recognize as my good pal Johnny Walker Scotch, J&B Whiskey, Smirnoff, Kettle One Vodka, Hennessy Cognac, Tanqueray Gin, Captain Morgan, the rum, among many others, wants some more of that sweet tequila action. And within the tequila business, Casamigos is so incredibly popular that we can't keep it in stock at Bar San Miguel, my small plate Mexican place in Brooklyn. Clooney only founded this company back in 2013. But by last year, Casamigos had sold 120,000 cases. That's extraordinary. This year, expected to grow 170,000 cases. Amazing growth. That the idea here is that Casamigos will keep the Casamigos will help the company take share in this super premium category, while also giving them a terrific platform to grow its tequila business overseas. As popular as tequilas become in North America, they don't drink it much in Europe or Asia. Diageo, though, already has some fabulous international distribution channels. And if they can keep Clooney as the face of the brand, this thing could really take off outside of the Western Hemisphere. Still, the thing that blows me away about this deal is just how much Diageo had to pay to get its hands on Casamigos. I'm not saying it was a mistake, but why don't we do something here? Let's compare this transaction to the last big tequila deal when Constellation Brands bought Casanoble back in 2014, before anyone really realized tequila was the next big thing. Constellation paid less than $30 million for Casanoble, a far cry from the billion smackers Diageo is shelling out for Clooney's brand. Granted, Casanoble was smaller at the time, selling about 20,000 cases a year. But since then, it's been expanding like crazy, doubling in the first year after the deal and more. According to Constellation, it's the fastest growing luxury tequila out there. Isn't that something? I can tell you from my Bar San Miguel experience that it's just as popular as Casamigos. I checked in last night to be sure. Yet if Casanoble had been valued like Clooney's brand, Constellation would have had to pay roughly $180 million. Remember, they only paid $30. Again, I'm not saying Diageo overpaid her. They're just later to the party than Constellation. But the liquor business is all about premiumization. And with Casa Noble, the company's already got a bunch of line extensions that likely mean Constellation's acquisition won't take very long to become profitable, including the super premium version that we charge a fortune for at the bar. With what Diageo's paying for Casamigos, management says it could take 3 years for the deal to become additive to the company's earnings. I don't like that. Long term, of course, it's worthwhile for them to have Clooney advertising for them if he sticks with it. The endorsement of the coolest man in the room never hurts. But what I come back to is the fact that this deal just shows how smart Constellation Brands is, that they remain the best liquor company on earth. They got Casa Noble for next to nothing, and it dovetails perfectly with the red-hot Mexican beer brands that we all know so well. Corona, Modelo, Pacifico, they can just load them up. This is what they do. They take them right, all of it. You take this one, you'll take this, and it is a premium tequila. Get this. We charge $16 for a nice glass of Casa Noble at Bar San Miguel. We charge just $14 for Casamigos. They both do about the same volume. All right, I'm not dissing Diageo. As you know, I like the stock very much, but that's for a particular reason. It's a British exporter, which means it will benefit enormously from the weak pound because of Brexit. And given the chaotic state of British politics right now, the Prime Minister Theresa May's government balanced on a knife edge, you have to believe the pound can get weaker still. Plus, historically, Diageo used to make a killing selling high-end liquor in China. If you want to bribe a communist official, few things work better than a bottle of Johnny Walker Blue. Unfortunately, China's government started cracking down on corruption a few years ago, but now they're finally letting up again. We know Richemont just reported great numbers last night. The Chinese communists love expensive watches. Another perfect bribe. Oh, another perfect gift if you're trying to do business in the People's Republic. That's terrific news for Diageo. Who knows? Maybe China will even discover tequila from Diageo thanks to a shared love of George Clooney. However, Constellation's got faster growth, and it's proven to be the savvier operator by far. They got into tequila early. They got into wine at the right price point, purchased high-end whiskey at the right moment, and they also bought into the craft beer market before that one surged, too. All thanks to the terrific leadership of CEO Rob Sands. Yet these two stocks trade bizarrely at roughly the same valuation. It's crazy to me. Constellation remains one of the best companies out there, the fastest growing in all of its business lines. And it deserves to trade at a higher level than Diageo, something that might happen when the company reports its earnings just next week. Still, at the end of the day, I can't help but like them both. The truth is that alcohol is one of the only products on earth where you can charge more for your merchandise than you could not too long ago. Inflation still happens in this business, at least if you're selling it in experiential settings. There are no real beer price wars these days anymore like there used to be. And premiumization means people will pay up for an aged product. Here's the bottom line. Look, I love both Constellation's Casa Noble and Diageo's soon-to-be-acquired Casamigos. I go back and forth for myself at Bar San Miguel. By the way, their bottles are right next to each other in the middle of the bar. They're the smoothest, and they've each been winners of blind taste tests at the joint. But based on what Diageo just paid to expand its premium tequila lineup, I have to conclude that Constellation is by far the better buy here because they got Casa Noble for so much less, and their stock, even after its huge run, remains nicely undervalued. Let's take some questions. Yes.
Hi, Jim. Raquel from New Jersey. Raquel. I have a question about Scotts Miracle-Gro. There's been some talk about Scotts Miracle-Gro being used by the marijuana growers. In view of the newer states adopting some potentially legal marijuana, is SMG a buy?
I think it is. It's interesting. They reported a quarter that a lot of people thought was weaker, and the stock still went up. Now, the market's been a little shaky here. It's down 7% for the year, but that is the hydroponic use of one of the divisions of Scotts is being benefited greatly by marijuana growing. I think the stock is fine. I also want to be careful, though. It's had a very big move. Because of that, yes.
Hi, I'm Elliot from Tenafly.
All right.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Last summer on my honeymoon with my wife, we were looking around for some buys. So the tour guide said, there are 235 McDonald's in Hong Kong. I said, I'm going to buy some. It went up and then it went down. But now it's at 150 and I don't own it anymore, 158. What do you think?
Okay, at McDonald's, this is Steve Easterbrook. One man shows you what you can do to a company. He's turned it around. The franchise is bought in. I think at 154, it is still a buy. Buy some here, buy some lower. That's the best way to approach it. One tequila, two tequila, three tequila profits. Constellation and Diageo are both great liquor companies. But if the spirit moves you to buy one, I say stick with Constellation, the maker of Corona. Much more Mad Money at, including my exclusive with Mondelez. As more consumers buy food outside of traditional grocery stores, how is the company positioning itself? I'm going to talk with the CEO. Then Oracle is going through a metamorphosis, and it could help you make money. I'll tell you what's behind the change. And it's a company that works with Marriott, T-Mobile, and Berkshire Hathaway. And you may never have heard of it. I'll reveal it just ahead. So stick with Cramer. The stock of Mondelez, the snack food giant, which has been in the 40s for the last 2 years, finally be ready to break out from this range? Even if you're not familiar with the company, you've all chowed down on their wares here. You've got Nabisco Oreos, Cadbury, Philadelphia cream cheese, my fave, Chips Ahoy, Nilla wafers, Trident gum, Tang, so many other great ones. While its stock has been trading sideways, Mondelez has been working to rationalize its portfolio and come up with some terrific new growth strategies. And it's starting to work as costs have come down mightily. And the company's got some top-line growth that I think is being ignored since the last quarterly report, which was quite good. Oh, and there could be some consolidation in the industry that just might boost things further. Who knows? Just last week, Nestle announced that it's putting up its U.S. confectionery business for sale. Mondelez may be one of the obvious potential buyers. So is it finally time for this terrific food company stock to take off? Let's check in with Irene Rosenfeld. She's the chairman and CEO of Mondelez International. Learn more about how our company's doing, where it's headed. Ms. Rosenfeld, welcome to Mad Money. Great to see you, Irene. Have a seat. But you have really put it together. Over the last 5 years, you've cut costs out remarkably. The margins are about the best in the industry. You've got some top-line growth. Do you think it's are people going to start recognizing in your breakout of the pack, which does not have that kind of growth or those margins?
I hope so. I mean, I think we've delivered about 500 basis point of margin expansion over the last couple of years. We've delivered double-digit EPS growth, returned $15 billion to our shareholders in the form of dividends and buybacks. So we've got a really strong story. The challenge has been our top-line growth has been a little more muted. Right. But as you said, it's still distinguished. We've distinguished ourselves relative to many of the peer companies.
Well, what's interesting is the emerging growth markets are fabulous for you. Can those grow even faster than they are now?
Absolutely. I mean, when we formed the company in 2012 and we split off from the North American grocery business, that was the thesis. About 40% of our revenue is from the emerging markets, and they were growing at healthy, high single-digit, double-digit rates.
And the split-off, just so everybody knows, that you engineered has brought much better return than the S&P, and that's really important to point out. Yeah. Now, one of the things that people might say is, well, wait a second, it's snack foods. How much are people still eating snack foods? Are they good for you? Are they just treats? How are you dealing with the idea of the healthier consumer?
Well, look, we love snacks, okay. And the reason is because it's a $1.2 trillion set of categories globally. It's growing everywhere. If you look at the demographics of the consumers around the world, you have more women in the workforce, you have people commuting longer distances to work, so they're not eating traditional meals, they're eating snacks.
Right.
And so we like the margins. The margins, this private label penetration is much lower in snacks than you would see in other food categories. So we feel really terrific about our portfolio, and we think it is poised to break out.
There's other things you're doing that I really like. You're doing some terrific social media, probably one of the most advanced companies in recognizing where the people are.
Yeah.
And how are you allocating your marketing dollars?
Well, we've got 14 million Facebook fans. We're in the top five food brands.
Okay.
And we have an incredibly loyal following. And in today's digital world, that's really important as we think about how do we continue to build the equity of the brand.
Dunk challenge kind of thing, right?
The dunk challenge kind of thing. People have served Oreos at their wedding. I mean, there's a whole site to give you different ideas of what you can do with Oreos at your wedding. So there's a lot of a leverage in these brands, and we are taking every action we can to shift our spending from traditional media into digital. It's going to be about 30% of our spending by next year in markets here, like here in the U.S., it's about 50%.
All right. Have you won back Donald Trump? He said, I love Oreos. I'll never eat them again. Okay, I'll never eat them again. Yeah, and he says, because Nabisco closes the plant, just announced a couple of days ago in Chicago, moving plant to Mexico. Have you resolved that? Does he understand what was going on?
Well, look, in fairness, I think there was a lot of misstatement in some of those early statements. The fact of the matter is the United States is a major manufacturing and business hub for us.
For you.
We've got 17,000 employees employees right. here in the U.S. We absolutely continue to manufacture all of our products here in the U.S. We just happen to have located four lines in Mexico, but we've invested over $500 million in our manufacturing facilities here in the U.S.
And you do something else that I think younger people now follow and make decisions about where to work and also where to eat. Sustainability development goals. Talk about your cocoa project, which I think is extraordinary.
Yeah, well, obviously, cocoa is a very important input ingredient for us. We're the largest chocolate manufacturer in the world, and we care a lot about the future of our supply. And so we have invested over $400 million in a program we call Cocoa Life. The intent is to help improve the livelihoods of cocoa-producing farmers. Many of these are family-owned businesses. Many of them are small leasehold farms owned by women. And the opportunity to help these farmers earn a more attractive livelihood, to learn how to use modern state-of-the-art farming methods, all of that is good for them, and it's good
for us.
You're
talking about tens of thousands of people.
Yes, it is.
Well, that's fantastic. Now, I wanted to ask you, you know that Nestle's put this up, and I, you know you can't necessarily say, yes, we're going to bid for it, but the Butterfingers, Baby Ruth, this seems like old brands, but I don't know, you've been able to revitalize some old brands. Is that worth kicking the tires on?
We look at everything that's out there, but I feel very comfortable with our portfolio as it exists today. We have a very robust set of growth strategies designed to take these iconic brands and bring them to the next level.
It seems very clear that you've got some power brands that are growing really well. Would it pay to just say maybe trim the ones that aren't and put more money toward power brands?
Look. We love our power brands. It's 70% of our revenue, and they're the brands that you know best. They typically have higher margins. Mm-hmm. They're growing at twice the rate of the rest of the portfolio. But the reality is the other brands, there's some very good brands in the rest of the bunch there. About a third of these non-power brands are brands like Nilla wafers, Nutter Butter that you know well, that have very good potential and very good growth potential. There's a portion of those brands, like Cheez Nips, for example, here in the U.S., that just provide scale for us in our trucks and on the mm-hmm. shelf. And then there are some that actually are candidates to be taken out. And slowly but surely, we just announced a deal for some of our French confectionery brands that we sold to Eurozao. And we will continue to look at opportunities to do that, but we want to do it in a disciplined way because I don't want to give up the shelf space, and we want to make sure that we don't open the door to competition.
Speaking of shelf space and competition, one of the things that you guys have been great on is online. So I know that already with Amazon. You've said that even in the June conference with your person who now runs the USA. But you have to think it's a stunner, this Whole Foods Amazon tie-up. Does that cause a kind of like a battle station meeting at Mondelez where what do?
No.
No. Okay.
It. I mean, I think if anything, it's a clear validation of the notion that the consumer is shopping everywhere.
Right.
And all of us better pay attention to that.
Well, that's something you recognized early on. You do a huge snack business on Amazon already.
Yes, we do. And snacks as a set of categories are not yet that big. It's only about 2-3% of sales here in the U.S. But over time, we intend to be the snacking leader online as we are in the bricks and mortar space.
I was just going to ask you about brick, but the other brick, other than Brazil, it seems like that you're really getting some great traction. Russia's coming back, green shoots.
Yeah.
China, you're doing. Germany's remarkable. I mean, it really seems like as economies come back, they snack more.
Absolutely. And that's why we have such great confidence that this portfolio is poised to break out on the top line as it has on the bottom line.
You've always said that there has to be more consolidation in the industry. Is it imminent or is it everybody left doesn't want to be taken over and wants to stay independent?
You know, every time there's an announcement of any transaction, everybody says, oh, that's the beginning of a big wave of consolidation. I think each company has to think about that for themselves. Again, I come back to our company. We have a fabulous portfolio. We have a fabulous geographic footprint. 40% of our sales are in the emerging markets. They are coming back. They will come back even more. And we feel terrific about the supply chain investments.
Okay. One last question. I know that U.S., you were not happy. You said that in last quarter, but you've made some changes. I look at this. I think that this is brilliant. I think the Oreo candy bar is fantastic. We are doing a lot of fun stuff with Oreos. Well, are we going to see a turn in the U.S. this year from the changes you're making right now?
Yes, you will, Jim. And I particularly think in the back half of the year, as I said in the earnings call, we have the most robust health and well-being pipeline in our U.S. franchise that we've ever had. We actually have a number of products that are just renovations of existing things, things like Belvita Protein with 10 grams of protein. Very, very strong item for us. We're introducing, we actually introduced a product called Good Thins last year that's selling quite well. It's going to be about over $100 million this year for us. We have a GMO-free version of Triscuit coming out. So we're doing lots of work in terms of renovating our core portfolio. Ritz Crispin Thins, which is a fabulous chip-like product that's oven-baked, not fried, 50% fewer calories than regular chips. But probably our most exciting item is this one called Veya. And it's a whole new product that we're launching in July. And the combination of all of these items, together with very strong execution, is what gives me great confidence in the back half of the year.
Well, it gives me great confidence this is the right level to buy the stock. It really is. And whether there's consolidation or not, it's going to work for you. That's Irene Rosenfeld, the chairman and CEO of Mondelez International, taking out a huge amount of costs and now going on offense with a growth strategy. Mad Money's back after the break. Got to be extra careful with freshly minted IPOs. Back at the beginning of May, I introduced you to Yext, a newly public tech company with a cloud-based platform that helps businesses manage important information online, like their location, phone number, hours of operation, syncing all this stuff up with other 100 services, including Google Maps, Facebook, Siri, and Yelp, among many others. Yext makes it so you don't need to coordinate with dozens of different social media places. Their easy-to-use technology disseminates accurate information to everybody. Still, I was skeptical. I fear competition on the web at all times, and I'm wary of companies that are losing, not making monies. So even if they're growing very fast. However, on this show, we're always willing to listen to the other side of the story. So let's take a closer look with Howard Lerman. He's the co-founder and CEO of Yext to get a better sense of how his company's doing, where it's headed. Mr. Lerman, welcome to Mad Money. Good to see you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so you're when I go to your website, it says you're the single source of truth for the public facts about your company. So tell me how that works.
Well, Jim, we are witnessing a massive platform shift from mobile to intelligence. It used to be that when you look for something, you'd find 10 blue links back on a page.
Right.
But now when you go to search for something, you get a structured, direct answer. So if I were to go and ask, hey, Siri, where is the nearest McDonald's?
Okay, Howard, here's what I found.
She just tells me the answer directly.
Right.
There's no web result there. And for every business in the world, this is a huge deal because their websites used to be the centerpiece of their digital experience. But now at the exact moment of intent, it's maps, it's voice search, and it's knowledge card answers. And that's why we founded Yext.
Well, I want to stop you there because I like this idea. We'll take it further. With Yext, if I wanted a broccoli cheddar soup, I would be able to get to where I got it, right? Because that's how you talk about Panera.
That is a detailed part of what we call digital knowledge. Every intelligence service, whether it's Google or Apple or Facebook, they all have three layers. They have their UI, they have their algorithms, and they have their knowledge base. Their knowledge base is where Yext comes in. For our customers, we sync all their digital knowledge, all the details about, for example, the Panera menu, the broccoli cheddar soup item. Or if Citibank wants to change the phone number of one of their branch locations, they just put that information into Yext, and boom, it updates instantly on over 100 different intelligence.
If they
services.
Didn't do that, what would happen is that they would have it right on their site, but everybody else, it would have to be by hand. You'd have to call each person.
Every intelligence service, remember those three layers?
Yes.
That knowledge layer, that's almost like a giant database of all the facts about the company. And every intelligence service compiles this knowledge base from multiple third-party sources, like web crawling, for example, or user-generated content. The challenge is when there's conflicts. Suppose a company's website says they open at 8, but a user reports they open at 10. Well, we think the ultimate authority is the business. It's not enough for a business to just sit back and hope that the right information is found. Proactively push the truth into the world.
Now, one of my concerns was you're growing 37. You've got great revenue growth. You're doing land grab, which is right. You want to make it so nobody else comes in. But at what point do you think that you will be profitable?
Well, last quarter, when we issued our guidance, we went on the record saying we believe we'll be profitable by the end of on a cash flow basis by the end of next year, give or take a quarter.
So we got to hold you to that. I mean, obviously, because you're a new public company. I know that we are always wary because we want to see both that expansion, but we also have to balance that with bad losses.
This is a huge market. There are more than 100 million locations in Google Maps alone. We have 1 million. So we're only 1% penetrated into what we could do. That number doesn't even contemplate other entities like menus, like we talked about,
right,
which we charge for and charge by. We have more than a $10 billion addressable market where we can go out and win. We believe, by the way, this is a winner-take-all market.
Yeah.
Our business benefits from a huge network effect. You cannot just call up Apple and tell them you want to update a fact on Siri.
Okay, I want to talk just for the last minute. June 13th, new product, App Directory. How is that doing?
All the biggest software companies, from Salesforce to Workday, are all platforms.
Right.
They have the CRM platform for Workday. There's employee workforce management. Yext is all about digital public knowledge, the facts. Today, that's best expressed on a company's website in an unstructured form. We enable companies to structure that knowledge and push it out to the world, but also enable them to integrate now with one click internally across the enterprise with great apps like HubSpot, Salesforce, Zendesk.
Well, I know people use you. I know people work at your company, and it's growing like mad. And now I'm going to hold you that profitability idea, but you're in the right spot.
You're certainly
in the right spot. That's Howard Lerman, the CEO of Yext, and he wants it all. They are right now pretty much the only game in town. Man, buddy's back after the break. It is time. It's time for the lightning round. Please, 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 please,
Hi, Jim. Larry from New York. Hopefully you remember you sat at the Belmont Stakes, you and your wife, for the Triple Crown, and I made you some money. So today, hopefully you can make me some money. New York Community Bank.
I like New York Community Bank. I think it's good. I do think as the Fed raises rates, it's going to be good. I gave everybody Receptos at that, just so we remember. And it got it to take over, including the jockeys who just didn't seem to get it at all. Sir.
Jim Darrell Thomas, Newark, New Jersey, Brick City, baby.
Yes!
Want to ask you about Citigroup. Finally, he gave me a raise.
Which one?
Finally, Citigroup.
Oh, Citigroup. Oh, okay. They just reported the stress test, the flying colors. Next week, I think Mike Corbett's going to ask for a bigger dividend. I think he gets it. I want to hold on. My Chapel Trust owns it. I like it, sir.
Hi, Jim. Steve from San Antonio, Texas. I want to thank your staff for all you do for the small investor, what you educate, and what you teach.
Thank you. Thank you for coming up.
My stock is the crossroads of the stay-at-home economy, where pets become much more important.
Okay.
And the humanization of pets.
Yes.
There's a medical company that has a potential blockbuster drug for allergies in pets that do not suppress the autoimmune system. It's not reflected in the revenues yet. It's Cytopoint, and it's Zoetis, and their drug is Cytopoint. And it's approved in Europe and the U.S.
Like it. Like it very much. Like it very much. I think it's good. Now, by the way, I do prefer IDEX. IDXX. That's the best one. Yes.
Hi, Jim. Augie from Berkeley Heights, New Jersey, and a big booyah to you from Berkeley Heights.
Oh, of course, Nate. Neighboring. What's going on?
After a very nice run-up the last 18 months, but with some patent pressure on the horizon, what are your thoughts on AbbVie?
No, I think there was an upgrade today. I think AbbVie's real good. I happen to like Abbott even more because the medical device business is good, and I like Miles White, but AbbVie's real good. I'm not worried about the patent expiration. I think they're going to pull it off. I honestly do. I do like the group very much. Yes.
Hi, I'm Denise from New York. I love your show.
Thank you.
U.S. Steel, do you think
No. We're Nucor people. Now, within the next 5 days, I expect the president to be able to announce that he's going to shut down all Chinese steel, and U.S. steel is going to go up $4, then you have to sell. But Nucor could go up 15. They already pre-announced, all the expectations are lower. I say buy Nucor. Yes.
Hi, Jim. It's Rafi from Houghton, New Jersey. What do you think of CRC, California Resources?
Oh, man. No. Way too speculative. Wait, CRC?
Yes.
No, we're not going there. That's a company that, that was the spinoff of Oxy. I don't even like Oxy anymore. I sure can't own CRC. That stock has come and gone. Sell. Yes.
Booyah, Jim. Booyah. A from New Jersey. Valiant VRX is
The stock is on a major roll. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And Bill Miller's going out there saying everybody is good. I still don't like the balance sheet, but I recognize that the Pop is doing a good job. And he used to be a Pergo. So I'm not going to recommend it, but I see an up stock, and I know an up stock when I see it, I guess is what I'm going to say. It's momentum play. Yes.
Hey, Jim. Mike from New York, Eastern Long Island. Happy booyah.
You bet.
Asking about Mattel, sell or hold?
Wait, we got Hasbro. Why are we going down the food chain? Why don't we go with the best of breed? Why are we going with the worst of breed? You buy Hasbro right here, 110. I think you'll do great. Yes.
Hi, Jim. Deepak from New Jersey. I am looking at Editas Medicine. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Which one, Veritas?
Editas Medicine.
Hey, you stopped me. I don't know it.
Okay, thank
you. There you go. I don't know that name. Yes.
Booyah, Jim. Indy from Central New Jersey. I had a question on Alexion. With all the management changes, do you think it's safe to...
Yes, I do, actually. I think both Insight and Alexion, which people think are disappointing, I think both of them work. Insight, I think, it's taken over. It's fine on fundamentals, and Alexion's good, too. I like both of them. And that, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of the Lightning Round!
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
You know what? Occasionally, you have to appreciate the value of hubris. Every now and then, rather than being a fatal flaw, it's actually a virtue. Today, Oracle stock roared up more than 8%, precisely because last night, management exuded a level of confidence and hubris that was off the charts. Some might have found it off-putting, but to me, pure joy! Obviously, the market felt the same way as the stock levitated throughout the conference call and just kept climbing to an all-time high in after hours. Reproduced today. I often stress how important these quarterly conference calls can be, because the call is where you find out how well a company's done versus the expectations. It's where they give you the true forecast, warts and all. Oracle's a huge company. So to see its stock rally this hard tells us we're witnessing one thing, an on-the-fly re-rating of a company from value status to growth status. The metamorphosis is totally deserving, given how the earnings, revenues, and guidance, triple, that's what you need, the triad, vastly exceeded expectations. Frankly, it was as though somewhere between the last quarter and this one, Oracle woke up one morning as a totally different company. It's like a Kafka story, except that it's a happy ending. That's why I didn't mind that co-CEOs Safra Catz and Mark Hurd, as well as Chairman Larry Ellison, were totally over the top in their effusiveness about this quarter and the transition. They deserve to celebrate. They can party down. They deserve the end zone dance. And I, for one, am not throwing any flags because I think occasionally it's right to crow when you do something very right. And make no mistake, Oracle's nailing the transition from on-premises computing to the cloud. I can share all sorts of the hyperbole that they dished out. Safra was at her best talking about how this wasn't the culmination of the transition, but the beginning of both expanding margins and faster growth, a combination most managers are dying for. Bye. Mark was on clouds 9, 10, and 11 when he was kept reeling off big brand name new clients and saying that things are terrific. I loved his in-your-face answer to a question about whether the new client queue is still growing. Our pipeline is big. How confident am I in more cloud bookings than this year? Extremely. Put quotes around it. Extremely. Underline it. I love when Larry did some trash talking about challenging Salesforce.com on growth and Amazon Web on better economics for clients. It does help that Oracle has many more cloud verticals. And while I don't expect Oracle to pass Amazon as a place to store, that ain't going to happen. It sure seems like it can keep its clients from migrating there. Don't sell the stock to Salesforce in the comments, but Oracle does play hardball. The quarter is also serves as a lesson to IBM. When I spoke to CEO Ginni Rometty earlier this week about how IBM is trying to grow its strategic imperatives business while stemming declines in its legacy or incumbent division, it's clear that her company's just not there yet. The transition is taking too long for many investors, including Warren Buffett, who sold a lot of his position. But I could have said the same thing about Oracle not too long ago either. Just the same thing. Nevertheless, when they got it right, after some good acquisitions and excellent selling, you can see what happens. If IBM had the same kind of quarter that Oracle gave us, it would be at 180 up from 154 in a heartbeat. Buy. After listening to thousands of conference calls in my career, I have my own way of judging a quarter. It's called the congratulations to question ratio. 9 analysts asked questions about the quarter on that call. 8 of them gave them some form of congratulations. Only Goldman Sachs' Heather Bellini, one of my absolute favorite analysts, resisted the siren call. Or it would have been a perfect game. Normally, I'd like that impartial, diffident kind of question, but not this time. Come on, Heather, join in on the fun and embrace Oracle like everyone else. Why? Because that stock, it's going higher. Bye.
House pleasure.
Stick with Kramer. All right, oil's trying to find a bottom here. I don't know if it can hold. Still don't have enough demand. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.